It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll speak with a Wisconsin Islamic leader about recent comments made by presidential hopeful Ted Cruz about policing Muslim neighborhoods.
But first, the five remaining presidential candidates squared off yesterday in the latest round of primaries and caucuses.
On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders did well in a couple of states participating in Western Tuesday, with Hillary Clinton taking a win in one of those three. And Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are still battling for delegates on the Republican side.
And President Obama made a historic trip to Cuba this week, making him the first sitting president in 88 years to visit the island. The president was in Cuba when news broke that there was a terrorist attack in Brussels. We'll talk about his reaction to those attacks a little bit later.
Joining us now to talk about all of this and more is Harry Enten. He's the senior political writer and analyst for 538. Harry, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
So yesterday, voters in three Western states headed to the polls. Idaho, Arizona, and Utah all had Democratic races. Republican voters voted in Arizona and Utah. How do these states compete with other big delegate states in the country?
Well, I mean, none of the results that we saw yesterday were really surprising, right? If we look at the demographics, we look at the polling, everything that we thought about both the Democratic and Republican race is basically the same after last night. So you had Bernie Sanders, who won in Idaho and won in Utah. Those are good delegate prizes for him. But Hillary Clinton won in Arizona. Not a big surprise there. Large Hispanic vote. She tends to do better with states that have large Hispanic or African-American populations. Bernie Sanders gained overall in the delegate count, but Clinton's so far ahead that he really wasn't able to splice into her lead very much. On the Republican side, we had Utah and Arizona. Trump was expected to do well in Arizona. He did. He won all 58 delegates there. Cruz was expected to do very well in Utah. He got well over 50% of the vote, thereby triggering a winner-take-all. He took 40 delegates. No big surprises. It really just sets up what, to me, is potentially the most important primary of the Republican season so far in Wisconsin 2 weeks from now, and we'll see what happens. Though a new poll that just literally came out has Cruz up by a point in Wisconsin, but we'll see when some more reliable polling from Marquette comes out whether Cruz is able to hold on to that edge.
You think Wisconsin is going to be the biggest key to this race so far? Why Wisconsin?
I think so. And the reason that it is, you know, for Donald Trump, the real question is whether Donald Trump gets 1,237 delegates. If he cannot get there, we have a contested convention. And if you have a contested convention, who knows what happens? And Wisconsin is one of those states. We at 538 basically surveyed a whole bunch of experts on how they thought the remaining states would go. And Wisconsin was one of those states where the experts pretty much split, where some of the experts thought it'd be a good state for Trump and a whole bunch of other experts thought it wouldn't be. And any bit that you can get, either Trump doing better than expected or worse than expected, could make or break his chances of getting the 1,237 delegates. And Wisconsin, which has a number of delegates at stake and is a real state where Trump and Cruz should both be competitive. If Cruz overperforms, it would make it much more difficult for Trump to be able to reach that and give Cruz a real shot in a contested convention.
So we've been talking about Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, but Governor John Kasich is still vying for the GOP nomination. He's still hanging in there. He was well behind in Arizona, but technically beat Trump in Utah. You know, what does his game plan need to be at this point?
You know, I really don't know what the heck John Kasich's campaign is doing, to be perfectly honest. You know, I understand Trump insofar as that he's unpredictable. He says things and he throws things against the wall and hopes that the media follows him. But Kasich, for instance, spent over $600,000 in Utah and then comes away with, yes, he beat Trump, but he still comes away with less than 20% of the vote in the state. It made no sense for him to make a play there. I think Kasich could be competitive in some of these northeastern primaries, say New York, say Rhode Island, say Pennsylvania, but he doesn't seem to be making a play there. If I were him, I would be going to New York right now. I'd be, you know, trying to play up, trying to get delegates. If he holds Trump under 50%, either statewide or in congressional districts, Kasich could win delegates. That's where I would be right now, but he's not there. I just don't understand what he's doing, and truthfully, it is a huge mystery to me. Yes, he's still around, but if he's going to these states like Utah and Arizona and not winning delegates, so what if he's on the campaign trail? The name of the game is winning delegates, and he's not doing that.
Is he maybe hoping that if he stays in and stays in the news, stays in front of people's eyes, that if there is some big shakeup at the convention, that maybe that positions him to slide into the nominee position that way?
Yeah, I mean, that's really his only hope. I mean, he's not going to be able to get to 1,237 delegates, and if the Ted Cruz campaign is also being honest with itself, it can't get there. The only person who can get there is Trump. But Ted Cruz would be in a far better position to contest the convention because he would have many more delegates than Kasich would. Kasich's only shot is in a contested convention, but in order to get to a contested convention, you need to be able to hold Trump under 1,237 delegates, and that's why I don't really understand what Kasich is doing by going out to Utah, wasting time there, because the only thing he could have done was kept Cruz under 50% of the vote, which would have allowed Trump to accrue delegates, instead of going to New York, where if he can keep Trump under 50%, he can help take delegates away from Donald Trump and at the same time build up his own delegate total. So, I mean, Kasich is in it, obviously, for a contested convention, but I'm just not sure what he's doing is necessarily helpful in ensuring a contested convention takes place.
We're talking national politics right now with 538's Harry Enten. And Harry, it sounds like, at least on the GOP side of things, we won't really have a party winner. We might not have a party winner until June. Seems like a long ways off, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, this Republican race is not going to truly be settled for a while. We won't really know whether Trump gets to 1,237 delegates until June 7th. I mean, again, going back to that panel that we did at 538, all of the experts agreed upon that. That's the day when California votes, and that's such a key primary with 172 delegates that are at stake. If Donald Trump does really well there, then it could really help him get to that 1,237 delegates. But if he doesn't, it will really hurt him. But it's still over 2 months away. California is a very interesting race, but we really won't know what goes on for a while. So I guess either buckle up and enjoy the ride, or maybe go and enjoy the sunshine or the blizzard if you're in Green Bay.
What does that do to the race if, you know, there aren't winners till so late in the game? How does that shape, you know, the way they can campaign and not really going at each other, Democrats or Republicans, until June?
Well, I think it probably hurts the Republicans. I mean, it did not keep Barack Obama from doing very well in the 2008 race, despite that race going on for a while. But it was far clearer at this point that Obama was almost certainly going to be the nominee because of the way delegates are proportioned on the Democratic side. But on the Republican side, it just means that the two or three candidates are really just going to go after one another, and they're going to have to stay concentrated on the primary. You're going to have a divided Republican Party. And at the same time, when you have President Obama's approval rating going up, and Clinton, although she's still competing with Sanders, is very close to being the inevitable nominee, she'll be in a far better position than the Republicans will be.
So, as you said, Hillary Clinton won in Arizona last night. In her victory speech, she took an approach similar to her rival, Bernie Sanders. She spoke about people's fears and frustrations with life in the U.S. and the apathy that many people feel during this election cycle. Here's what she had to say.
When we see people running to be president of the United States who are literally inciting bigotry and violence, it's easy to say, you know, I'm not even going to pay attention to that. But what I want you to know is we've got to reclaim the promise of America for all of our people, every single one of them.
So do you see Hillary Clinton ramping up her passion and her rhetoric to appeal to voters who might still be waffling between her and Sanders, or Sanders supporters who she's hoping to bring into the fold?
I mean, obviously she would like to win more primaries than not going forward, but I think her team looks at the delegate math and understands what really is the main priority at this point is when she wraps up the Democratic nomination, she wants to bring those Sanders supporters into the fold. And I think, you know, you can listen to Hillary Clinton, and that's one thing, but you can also listen to Elizabeth Warren, who hasn't endorsed anybody in the primary, and she took to Twitter and did a whole tweet storm against Donald Trump, basically saying that Democrats need to come together. And I mean, look, primary politics can be bloody, they can be tough, they can be difficult, but at the end of the day, Bernie Sanders supporters, for the most part, now there's some who don't, but for the most part have a lot more in common with Hillary Clinton than they do with Donald Trump. And I think Hillary Clinton would be wise to make sure that she doesn't alienate them, and I think that's what she's kind of been doing the past few days and weeks.
Switching gears now, President Obama on a historic visit to Cuba this week, and a lot going on this week outside of that visit. There have been the primaries and the attacks in Brussels. What has the political response been to that visit?
I mean, the response is what you'd basically expect, right? I think a lot of Republicans who don't like this idea of normalizing relationships with Cuba don't really like what he's doing. And when he's at a baseball game and there's the attack in Brussels, they'll obviously attack him over that. But most Americans are, for the most part, perfectly fine with normalizing relationships with Cuba. And they recognize that the president is doing what he needs to be doing, and that there was no real reason for him to necessarily rush back, although Republican presidential candidates like John Kasich certainly took pot shots at Obama, which is basically to be expected.
Well, and in an interview with ESPN, President Obama did defend his decision to stay in Cuba after news of Brussels. Here's what he had to say.
It's always a challenge when you have a terrorist attack anywhere in the world, particularly in this age of 24/7 news coverage. You want to be respectful and understand the gravity of the situation. But the whole premise of terrorism is to try to disrupt people's ordinary lives.
So, Harry, do you think that President Obama is going to have any lasting fallout from staying in Cuba, or is this just going to get buried by the next presidential candidate comments that get blown out in the media?
I think that there's not going to be any lasting sort of impacts from it at all. I mean, most Americans were not watching that interview. I happen to be because I love baseball. But I think that most Americans are just – they recognize that, look, the president is a person. The president should, you know, keep doing what he's doing. If there was an attack on our land, that would be something different. But remember, you go back to when George W. Bush was president and, you know, it was after the 9/11 attacks and he was playing golf and, you know, he says, we must, you know, get those terrorist killers. Now watch me hit this drive. And then he took a shot from with his golf club. I mean, this is what normally happens, right? And I think Americans recognize that and they're not going to hold it against him.
And, Harry, based on where you're sitting, have you seen any sort of effect of the Brussels attacks on the presidential race so far?
I mean, you see it in the rhetoric from the candidates, right? We don't have any polling yet, but if you go back, for instance, to the San Bernardino attacks, you saw the same thing with Donald Trump, you know, hyping up all this anti-immigration rhetoric. And you also saw Ted Cruz kind of taking a part in that, too. Maybe not nearly as harsh as Donald Trump, but fairly close to it. That's the type of thing that we would expect to happen. Whether or not that has an impact on the polling numbers, we don't know yet. But the last time it did, that we had the San Bernardino attacks, in fact, we did see a slight rise in Donald Trump's polling. So it'll be interesting to see if that occurs. But for now, all we've really seen is just that the rhetoric has certainly been ramped up a step or two by the Republicans.
And wrapping up, Harry, going back to Cuba, President Obama is in his final year of office. Do you think this trip and what might lead to normalized relations with Cuba will factor into his presidential legacy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is what the president's been doing. He has been laying the groundwork throughout these final few years in trying to ensure that he has left behind a legacy that not only is memorable, but one that it can be proud of. And if you look at the polling, most Americans agree with his decision on Cuba. But it'll be interesting to see as the years kind of go on how Americans exactly view it.
Harry, thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Harry Enten is a senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week to talk about politics.